What's the strangest thing you're afraid of?
Tails without fur on them, such as rats or possums.
I'm Larry Mullins, host of the podcast Your Weirdest Fears, where we dig into the crazy things you're afraid of. Everything from animal-people hybrids, you know, people who get surgeries to look like an animal, to giant statues.
If I ever saw one of those giant statues, I probably would poop my pants.
Listen and subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast from.
The listening you love is on the free Odyssey app. Your trusted local radio stations, coverage of your favorite teams, live news from your hometown, and millions of podcasts on demand. Best of all, you can completely customize your listening experience. Follow topics you care about, like leagues and teams. Pause or rewind your local sports and news, and add shows to your queue to catch up later. There's a lot to listen to, so get started and download the free Odyssey app today.
Live from the Police Show, yet not overly ostentatious studios of CBS Sports Radio here in beautiful New York City, sitting on top of the 10th floor of 345 Hudson Street. Welcome on in to a Tuesday edition, the day after edition of the National Championship Game, right here on CBS Sports Radio across all of our great local CBS Sports Radio affiliates, Sirius XM, Channel 158, and that free Odyssey app. 855-212-4CBS is the number to jump on in, 855-212-4227. You could always get at me on Instagram where I'm straight flexing, or via the good old cesspool of Twitter, at Zach Gelb. That's ZACHGELB. Producing this extravaganza for the next 4 hours is no other than Hot Take Hickey.
I don't know about that Hot Take Hickey.
Alec Ingold is going to swing by 20 minutes from now from the Miami Dolphins. And the Dolphins are off to the postseason and will go up against the Buffalo Bills on Sunday. And then at 8:20 p.m. Eastern, 5:20 p.m. Pacific, Aaron Murray will stop by as well. And the former Georgia quarterback, now college football analyst, as the Georgia Bulldogs are back-to-back national champions, and this year, even with how great it was last year for Georgia, and they were able to finally climb to that mountain, get to the top, and scream out victory, and you know that they, even after losing to Alabama in the SEC title game, was able to get to the national championship game and was able to slay Alabama in the national title game. You didn't think it could probably get better than that for Georgia, but this year, to not lose a game, really, other than Missouri, and in the semifinal up against Ohio State, to not really have many close games this season where you're at all shaking in your boots, this is just as dominant of a run, really, as you could get. Now, I don't know if it means they're the most dominant team of all time. Like, just in recent memory, that LSU team was absolutely sick when they went undefeated as well with all the bevy of talent that they had. And you've seen what some of those guys, just in the short time that they've had, have been able to go on and have successful NFL careers. But this Georgia program, they're on top of the world for back-to-back years. And I think the way that you look at it, until someone beats them in the playoff, you can't pick against them. They now have the Alabama treatment where for years and years and years, you look at Alabama, okay, they lost in the regular season, or they lost in an SEC title game or whatever it was. It doesn't matter, just as long as Alabama is in the national championship hunt and they're in the top four for the college football playoff, you're going to say Alabama until someone takes them down. That is now what Georgia has done. And the beauty of it is Georgia has done it going up head-to-head in Alabama's conference, because we all know the SEC is the best conference in football. You can make cases that it's not. You're just not. If you're the case and you're saying that the other conference is better than the SEC, you're either just delusional or you're just a hater. And that's coming from someone without a dog in the fight. But what Georgia has done is just on its own is so impressive, back-to-back national championships. But to be able to do it in the SEC, where the way that the college football landscape has been for the better part of the last decade, where Alabama is the creme de la creme team, it's Alabama and everybody else in college football. Sure, there's years where you see Ohio State win it all. Sure, those years where you see Auburn win a national championship. And you look at some other schools as well, Clemson, and their dominance that they've been able to do. Whenever someone else pops up, you usually see Alabama the next year answer right back. Now, with Georgia doing this 2 years in a row and Alabama missing the college football playoff outright this year until someone takes down Georgia in the college football playoff with the machine that Kirby Smart has built in Athens, Georgia, I think you'd be foolish to pick against Georgia. And last night, I know people are going to say, TCU didn't belong in the national championship game. Nonsense. If that was in the semifinal, you could have merit to your claim. You could make the argument that TCU should have been left out of the college football playoff if, and I thought TCU was deserving to get in, if they would have lost in the semifinal. But after they beat Michigan, that goes out the window regardless of what happened last night. Now, with that being said, I don't even want to call it a drubbing last night. That was an absolute massacre. We've seen lopsided moments before in sports. We've seen in boxing or the UFC first round knockouts within the first 30 seconds. We've seen in college football about a decade ago, Alabama just totally dragged Notre Dame all across the field. We've seen in a Super Bowl, the Seattle Seahawks just dominate from the first snap of the game, the Denver Broncos. But what we saw last night in a national championship game, in my lifetime, in all the sports, in just one standalone game, in a championship game, I've never seen in 60 minutes of play a more dominant performance than what Georgia did to TCU last night. And you saw it coming so early. Like, we were talking about this as this game got underway. By the time we left the studio, the game was already clearly over. But when it got to 10-0, you thought that was just big for it becoming a game. And then TCU, they held Georgia to that field goal to make it 10-0. The next thing you know, TCU is in the end zone, and it's 10-7. And you're saying, okay, here we go. We got a game. And then womp, womp, womp. Because it was 65-7 was that final score. And even at halftime, you knew that Stetson Bennett could have started partying and could have started to drink if he wanted to make that Good Morning America appearance this time around, which I don't even think he made today. I don't even know. But I saw one interview that he did got canceled. He could have started drinking at halftime because it didn't matter for what the second half was. He could have been sober by this morning. Because at 38-7 at halftime, the fat lady was singing, this game was over. And you just got to tip your cap to Georgia. Georgia, take your bow for the second year in a row. You know, last year, all the takes went out the window. Oh, Kirby Smart just being a very, very good coach. No, he's great. I mean, we know that. That was showed once again consistently this year. Last year, he got to the top of the mountain, slaying Alabama. This year, he showed sustained success after losing so many players to the NFL. So that's really the take from last night's national championship game. From the Georgia side, it is just the dominance. It is them becoming the face of the sport. It is them saying, we are going to win it all every year until someone takes us down in a big spot. It is just a tip of a cap and a hour standing ovation to Kirby Smart. And then also you got to, for a lot of people, and I'm sure many people already issued their mea culpa to Stetson Bennett, but once again, if you said sorry before, you got to say sorry again. Because, Hickey, I went back, actually, and I think we had Hudson Mason on. And this was before the Michigan semifinal last year. And I was listening back to that interview, and Hudson said they're not going to pull him, but there was talk going into that semifinal game that if Stetson Bennett struggled early, they would pull him. And if you recall, all throughout that year, there was conversations of pulling Stetson Bennett. So he got the last laugh last year, but still, even heading into this season, there was still that feeling of people holding on to, oh, it was only three games. You know, he balled out in the SEC title game, in the semifinal game and in the national championship, but he's not going to sustain that success. And look, they lost so much talent. So he's going to take a step back. The guy was a Heisman Trophy finalist this year. And even when we were at the Heisman Trophy, Hickey, how many people were trying to say he didn't belong there? And he even said it to us. He goes, I can't control what people say. He goes, I think I belong. He also said he thought Hendon Hooker did belong as well. But to then see what he did in the big moments especially when you look at this past year's SEC title game, but then more importantly, being down to Ohio State with how much talent Ohio State has, that was a middle finger to everybody. And last night was anyone that's ever doubted me before in my life. And there was reasons to doubt Stetson Bennett. It's a really Hollywood-like story when you see the way he was a walk-on, then he had to go to JUCO, then comes back to Georgia. People trying to yank him off the field. He wins a national championship. Even this year, they tried to look at other places, and Stetson Bennett back as the quarterback, and he wins. Last night was take another bow, Stetson Bennett. And if you wanted to, flip off everyone that has ever doubted you, because you are now a back-to-back national champion, a back-to-back offensive player, most valuable player in the championship game. Most valuable offensive player. So that was just brilliant. So really, like last night, those are the two takes. It is Georgia. You are the top dog again. Until someone takes you down, you are the best team in college football. I will never doubt you in the regular season. I didn't really doubt you much going into this year. But until someone takes you down in the playoff, you're expected to win it all every year, fair or not. And for Stetson Bennett, one of the great stories that you'll ever see in college football, and it was on full display last night. And just a disparity. Like, clearly, I could read you 65-7, and you're like, oh, wow, what a game. Like, what a blowout. What a dominant performance. What a massacre, a drubbing by Georgia. But just, I thought the total yards were even more telling. 589-188. Think about that. Even if you thought TCU was going to get crushed last night, no one would have thought this would have been 65-7 or 589 total yards for Georgia to only 188 for TCU. Even when they were down big, you couldn't go get some big chunk plays and go get some points on the board to make it look like it wasn't that worse and stop the bleeding just momentarily. And on the TCU side, I said it once, I'll say it again. I don't want to hear from people today, TCU didn't belong in the game. You could have that claim maybe if they would have lost in the semifinal, but they beat Michigan. And you can't tell me Michigan didn't belong. And the other thing, and I'm not anti-Alabama. For years, I've always been someone, I love when Alabama's good. I like Nick Saban. I love all the talent that they have. Usually whenever I watch Alabama, my jaw hits the floor. But if anyone's saying today, Alabama should have been in the college football playoff, you're just wrong. Now, you could think to yourself, and you may be right, that Alabama had the best chance to beat Georgia, but Alabama didn't have a resume that was deserving enough and worthy enough to get into the top four teams in a year where they tried to open the door up so much for Alabama, even with their shortcomings. When you lose to LSU and you lost to Tennessee, and I know because we do this for every other team, so we'll do for Alabama, they barely beat Texas when Texas had Quinn Ewers go down in that game. They barely beat A&M, and they probably should have lost A&M if Jimbo Fisher knew how to call a play inside the five-yard line. So you could be right that Alabama maybe is the only team that can beat Georgia, but they didn't have the resume to say they deserve to go. And it wasn't like I was asking for them to be perfect this year. Just don't lose two games. And Ohio State almost beat Georgia. I don't know what Michigan would have done up against Georgia, but Michigan did beat Ohio State this year, and it wasn't particularly close. And if you're a Michigan fan, you got to be sick last night. Because I think the Michigan fan did acknowledge that TCU beat them. But I also think the Michigan fan thought, wow, we had so many things in the game where we just were out of character and we didn't show up in the moment. And if TCU would have lost by like a touchdown or less to Georgia, it probably would have been for the Michigan fan, just tip your cap to TCU. They beat us. They were the better team that night. But when TCU looks like an FCS school up against Georgia and you're a Michigan fan, you got to be sitting there saying, how the heck were we so unprepared up against TCU? And I don't want this to be lost in the entire thing. I know everyone's going to trash TCU today. TCU had a phenomenal season. They They weren't ranked before the year started. They were picked 7th in the Big 12. People didn't even like the Sonny Dykes hire. Max Duggan, I know he started before, wasn't even the starter before the year did commence because he lost the competition, and he got to the Heisman Trophy ceremony in New York and got to a national championship game. So, yes, we could all acknowledge TCU was great, and this was just an unprecedented, like, unbelievable, fun, Cinderella type of story. But when midnight did strike, it was an ugly, ugly ending. So that's from the takeaways from last night in the college football playoff national championship as the Dogs are on top as they beat, just destroy, annihilate TCU 65-7 in one of the more, in a single game, the most, maybe most ever dominant performance that you'll see by a football team in a championship game. That was just sick. Like, Hickey, what we saw last night, like in all the sports, I can't remember in a championship performance a team look that as dominant as Georgia did. That was insane.
We've literally never seen it. The biggest bowl win ever.
Yeah.
Which is, that's saying a lot. We've seen some
blowouts. But I'm talking about all sports.
Yeah, it's, you rarely see a championship game especially get out of hand that fast. And it was, it's a shame. It's a shame.
It's a shame because TCU had a wonderful season, but it just shows you once again how dominant Georgia has been. It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. We'll take a five-minute break. When we come on back, Alec Ingold for the Miami Dolphins is going to join us as the Dolphins are headed up to Buffalo this weekend, and we'll see if they'll be able to pull off the upset.
What's the strangest thing you're afraid of?
Tails without fur on them, such as rats or possums.
I'm Larry Mullins, host of the podcast Your Weirdest Fears, where we dig into the crazy things you're afraid of. Everything from animal-people hybrids, you know, people who get surgeries to look like an animal, to giant statues.
If I ever saw one of those giant statues, I probably would poop my pants.
Listen and subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast from. What's the strangest thing you're afraid of?
Tails without fur on them, such as rats or possums.
I'm Larry Mullins, host of the podcast Your Weirdest Fears, where we dig into the crazy things you're afraid of. Everything from animal-people hybrids, you know, people who get surgeries to look like an animal, to giant statues.
If I ever saw one of those giant statues, I probably would poop my pants.
Listen and subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast from.
The listening you love is on the free Odyssey app. Your trusted local radio stations, coverage of your favorite teams, live news from your hometown, and millions of podcasts on demand. Best of all, you can completely customize your listening experience. Follow topics you care about, like leagues and teams. Pause or rewind your local sports and news, and add shows to your queue to catch up later. There's a lot to listen to, so get started and download the free Odyssey app today.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show.
It is The Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on CBS Sports Radio. AFC East Showdown this weekend on Wild Card Weekend. It's the Buffalo Bills up against the Miami Dolphins, who found their way in the postseason after Sunday's performance up against the Jets. And then you also had the Patriots losing to the Bills. So Miami is in the playoffs. And now joining us from the Miami Dolphins is a fullback in Alec Ingold. Alec, how you been?
What's up, Zach? I'm good, man. It's good to get one in the win column, man. It was a little tumultuous for there for a little bit. How's that for a vocab word? But no, it's good. Excited to be in the playoffs. Excited to be back. One more week with the boys guaranteed. And we'll strap up and let it rip.
Obviously, it's just an elated feeling for you guys to clinch the postseason berth, especially with how it looked like it was going the other way down the stretch in a 5-game losing streak. Just take me inside that locker room. You guys got the job done, what you could control. You got the victory. Then you watch the Patriot game wind down, and then you officially know you're going to the postseason. What was that locker room like?
It was really cool, man. It's cool to be a part of a team that, you know, obviously it's my first year there, but a lot of these guys have been together 3, 4, 5 years, right? And to see all the work kind of epitomized in that moment, we put it all out on the field. We controlled what we can control, like just like you said. Seeing Thomas Morstead's kids in the locker room, you know, celebrating. There's a lot of guys where we're all at different journey spots along this way. So to be able to kind of sit there with the guys, with the whole staff and kind of see that one, three kneel downs by the Bills, it was cool to see. It's a proud feeling. obviously it's kind of a roller coaster of emotions, but definitely really excited to be able to get one more with these guys at least.
For you individually, you got hurt last year when you were with the Raiders. What is this year just kind of, when you look back and reflect, the grind coming back from rehab, joining a new team to be off to the postseason? Personally, how do you kind of just reflect on this past year?
I mean, it has been, I haven't really had those moments of reflection. You ask that question, it's like, yeah, I've kind of been through a lot, I guess. It's been cool, but at the same time, it's definitely had an impactful mindset from Coach McDaniel, just the whole growth mindset that he's kind of given our locker room to always be working on improving, never-ending self-improvement, the strive for perfection, knowing you're never going to arrive. All of those kind of thoughts have been with me and the rest of this team for, you know, 20, 25 plus weeks now. So just being a part of that locker room, it almost turns your brain off to the retrospect. It turns your brain off to looking back and seeing how far you've come, because you're always just so dialed into what day it is and how you can get better. He's all about mindful, intentional, deliberate work every single day. So yeah, it's been cool. And I think I'll be able to look back on the journey of being a free agent and choosing this team and them choosing me, and having to go through an injury, watching a playoff game from a coach's booth was not fun. So getting to play in one this year is going to be awesome. Just really thankful for that, for sure.
Take me through from week 16 to week 17, because this is like one of the best kept secrets, but it's crazy. You got surgery after the week 16 game, and we all know fullbacks are tough, Alec Ingle, but to be able to play in week 17 and not miss any time, if that was me and I needed thumb surgery, I would have been out for like a month.
Yeah, I think the whole decision to get surgery was tough. Like, I break my hand trying to tackle a Green Bay Packer. Just thumb hits the ground, whatever. Okay, so it's dislocated and it's fractured. So we're trying to put it back in. We're trying to hold it back in place and cast it up there. It's not working. It's coming out. So we have to get surgery. It has to get fixed. And Doc was pretty cool, calm, collected, put a couple pins in, and he was like, you're good to go. Like,
wow.
We'll be good. Surgery went awesome. You're a champ. And I took my vitamins. I've been drinking my milk, getting that calcium up. And it's just one of those moments where we're towards the end of the season. So many guys have put so much into it. You're on this losing skid, and it's really a test of your character. It's a test of who you are as a locker room guy, as a teammate, and trying to just strap up with those guys, bring that physicality, that presence, the 21 two-back personnel up to Foxborough and leave it all on the line there to try and clinch. Was big, and you fall short, but you get right back on it and you try and go again. And the second time was a charm.
Was there at all a thought of, here we go again, because you got hurt, different injury last year. And that team went on to go to the playoffs. You're fighting for your playoff lives. And then you get hurt again. Did you at all think, here we go again, where my season's going to be over?
Yeah. And I think you learn a lot about how your mind works like that, and to be able to stop that spiral and not let your mind go to that spot. Right. Because an ACL is immediately you're done 8-9 months. This is going to be a journey. Right. And then it's like, okay, it's a thumb. This isn't the same injury. It's not the same deal. Let's take it for what it is. Let's not make it more than what it is or less than what it is. And let's just listen to the doctors. Let's listen to the coaching staff and let's go play ball if we can play ball. And I'm just really thankful for the training staff and the surgeon and everybody that played a role in just getting the thumb right.
Now you're playing, but that does not mean that you still aren't feeling pain. How is the hand doing right now? Because this is insane that you're still able to give it a go.
Yeah, everyone has said once you have a club, it's going to be like a weapon. And I don't know. I don't know where these guys had like hard-sided. Like, mine's real nice and padded and soft, and I'm sure anyone that I block is like, what is this guy doing? Like, just let's get this club out of here. So haven't been able to use it to my advantage too much, but learning the game within the game, just overcoming it and being able to play different techniques, working on using my hands different ways, body leverage different ways. It's been a challenge. So it's been a new wrinkle to the season. That's for sure. And just thankful to still be able to get on the field with these guys.
What can you tell us about your quarterback in Tua Tagovailoa? Because the whole sports world is wondering if he's going to be able to get cleared and play this weekend.
Man, I hope Tua is, you know, obviously he's listened to all of the experts and everything like that. I think everyone in our locker room just wants dude to be safe, dude to be healthy. He's happy. He's joking around with the guys again. It's cool to see him in the locker room, and whatever that means for this game moving forward, like we'll be all right. And just making sure that guy's healthy and for the long term is cool with us. So I know coach has been in the media talking about that, the trainers, Tua himself. So I'm just really excited to see the guy happy moving around in the locker room. Like I think playing golf this off season is going to be fun. And if we can get him, that's going to be great. And it's going to be really fun for our offense to go up to Buffalo. And if we can't, just hopefully he's progressing the way that he has been, so that we can be teammates and friends for a long time.
Do you guys hear the outside noise? Cause it seems like going into this one, even before we find out who's going to be playing quarterback for the Dolphins this weekend, that no one's really giving you guys a shot in this game.
I mean, I think that's something where it's there and you can pay attention or you cannot. And everyone's going to have an opinion. Everyone's going to have feelings. And, you know, at the end of the day, we get to focus on details. We get to go into work and improve and play against a team that we've played twice, down to the wire two times. And you just got to be thankful for that opportunity and get ready to go play your best game. Put your best foot forward. Put great stuff on film. Be detailed. And if we can put four quarters of ball together, I mean – it's going to be fun, and it's obviously a really big challenge for us, but it's going to be fun to be able to get this opportunity with the guys. We earned it. It took all 18 weeks, but we're in the tournament, and I think that's all anyone asked for is just a shot to get in the tournament and see what we can do from there.
Alec Ingold here with us. Yeah, what type of team do you guys have? Because it seems like whenever I'm just about to buy in and you guys look like you're going to be a shooting for a playoffs at 8-3, then you guys go on that losing streak. There's been ups and downs. Obviously, there's been injury. When you guys now go into the playoffs, what type of team do you think the Miami Dolphins are entering wildcard weekend?
We're a bunch of fighters, and I think that's pretty indicative of the injuries that we've had to overcome, the adversity we've had to overcome. Everyone's sticking together. I think a lot of people could have thrown in the towel a number of different times and nobody's tapping. So we had a standard of hard work, discipline, you know, that mindful, deliberate practice all the way in training camp, just good on good, offense versus defense, you know, not afraid of competition, embracing that. And I feel like that's something that we've been doing all year long. And the results have been up and down, like you've been saying. But at the end of the day, like, I still think that we're improving as teammates. We're coming together. We're still learning each other. And I think that's what's been the cool part is you lose all the way down the stretch. It's so easy to quit. It's so easy to throw in the towel. It's so easy to listen to outside noise and for guys to be resilient, to find a way to win, to come together and win in different ways. I think that's really what our team's been this year. It's definitely been about the process. And I think that's the way we got to look at this one and just keep on keeping on.
Alec Ingold here with us. So I saw you have a book that just came out, Seven Crucibles. Tell me about that entire process and what the book is about.
Man, the Seven Crucibles really just started as journaling. You know, if you're in an ACL injury, anybody that's had a big piece of adversity in your life, I think a crucible is a test that takes everything out of you. And that's kind of how I was feeling. And, you know, I got some advice from a lot of guys to journal your thoughts out, just write it out on a piece of paper. And I started to think, like, maybe some other people could use this. Maybe this could be something where we could share this experience and I could just be relatable to anybody that's going through a big injury, anyone that has a big challenge in work or as an athlete. And the journaling turned into audio, turned into transcriptions, that turned into a manuscript, that turned into a copy of a book headed to a publisher. So it was just real raw emotion, channeling all of that to try and inspire somebody else to share that, to keep myself accountable of having a good mindset and overcoming these little obstacles along the way in this rehab journey. And so we got a book together and it's really exciting. It's really something where people will be able to read this, relate to it, whether you're injured or not, whether you're a business person striving to be the best of the best you can be, and embracing that, not being afraid of that. And there's a lot of lonely nights and lonely mornings on a training table where no one is there to, when you can't even straighten your leg, there's no one there to help you, right? And it hurts and you have to have that process all locked in mentally, physically, emotionally. So hopefully that book can really relate to a lot of people and just help be a little bit of inspiration or motivation whenever you're going through a trivial time so that you can really just push through, kind of see that light at the end of the tunnel and stay close to your goals and your priorities and your standard. And I think that's what it's all about. And it's really just taking the curtain back behind the NFL and what a rehab process looks like and how challenging it is.
I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you, because we're on a bunch of stations right now in Wisconsin. What are your thoughts on Luke Fickell joining your Badgers?
Man, Coach Fickell is bringing a lot of juice to Madison. It's been fun to watch from afar. Obviously, I'm out in Florida, but just seeing that entire athletic department embrace him. I know they're at a wrestling meet recently against Penn State, and it's just like, it just seems like there's a lot of energy there, and it's really cool to see that. And also just really proud of the guys in the whole program. I know this last year was crazy tough for the coaches, the alumni, the players that have all been a part of that. And for them to stick together, to fight all the way through to the end, to have a bowl win on top of all of that, I think is really cool to just show what Wisconsin's all about of just, you know, constantly raising the bar. And I think Coach Fickell's obviously raising the bar in his own way in this recruiting trail right now. So it's going to be exciting to see.
Now, I don't know if you could do this with your injury right now, but you're playing. Can you throw a football still with this injury or no?
I mean, if I stretch the fingers out, maybe I can grip it a little bit different. We'll have to, maybe I could go lefty too. I've been working on like eating and writing left-handed, so maybe I'm ambidextrous now. We'll see.
Because I don't want to do Mike McDaniel's job, but I could kind of see a little fullback pass 2 yards out, little trickery where you're throwing the ball this weekend in Buffalo. That's what I just have visions now, since you're getting a little bit of that Zach Gelb show karma.
I like it. I think I'm going to get double-sided tape on the club. So then when I throw it, it'll just kind of catapult the ball forward. We'll work on that.
Now, we need to go viral off this. So we need you to be a bad teammate and just go into coach's office tomorrow and say, Coach, we got to throw the football this week. Because this would be a pretty badass clip to have.
We talked it through. It's going to be 2 yards. We know where it's going to be. We already got this plan out. Yeah, for sure.
Well, Alec Engel, once again, congratulations on the book, 7 Crucibles. Congratulations on making the postseason, all the recovery in that. And good luck the rest of the way. We appreciate you joining us today.
Thanks for the time, Zach. Appreciate it.
You got it. There's Alec Engel for the Miami Dolphins.
What's the strangest thing you're afraid of?
Tails without fur on them, such as rats or possums.
I'm Larry Mullins, host of the podcast Your Weirdest Fears, where we dig into the crazy things you're afraid of. Everything from animal-people hybrids, you know, people who get surgeries to look like an animal, to giant statues.
If I ever saw one of those giant statues, I probably would poop my pants.
Listen and subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast from. What's the strangest thing you're afraid of?
Tails without fur on them, such as rats or possums.
I'm Larry Mullins, host of the podcast Your Weirdest Fears, where we dig into the crazy things you're afraid of. Everything from animal-people hybrids, you know, people who get surgeries to look like an animal, to giant statues.
If I ever saw one of those giant statues, I probably would poop my pants.
Listen and subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast from. What's the strangest thing you're afraid of?
Tails without fur on them, such as rats or possums.
I'm Larry Mullins, host of the podcast Your Weirdest Fears, where we dig into the crazy things you're afraid of. Everything from animal-people hybrids, you know, people who get surgeries to look like an animal, to giant statues.
If I ever saw one of those giant statues, I probably would poop my pants.
Listen and subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast from.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show.
It is The Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. Now, we may not need this to happen, but I am fascinated on what is going to be the answer and if that's going to be made public by the end of this weekend. It's got to be known, I guess, heading into divisional weekend on if you do get Buffalo and Kansas City in the AFC title game. Where is this AFC championship game going to be played? And really, in the moment last week, I just wasn't able to really get irate about anything in terms of what the NFL was going to schedule and all that. But if you're a Bengals fan, I now understand a little bit your gripe. Because last week I said, okay, if you're a Bengals fan, just beat the Ravens, then you avoid a coin flip. And you should be able to beat the Ravens, especially when they ended up starting Anthony Brown in the game. And even if they started Tyler Huntley, it shouldn't have mattered anyway. You should beat that team when you have Joe Burrow. And they did, and they don't have a coin flip. Now, if the Bengals got into the AFC title game against the Chiefs, that game would be in Kansas City. But it makes sense from a record standpoint, because even though the Bengals beat the Chiefs. The Chiefs have 14 wins. Even if the Bengals are able to play that game up against the Bills, the best that they could have from a record standpoint would be 13 wins. So that's why Kansas City would have the home AFC title game. Now, there's not a way that the AFC title game could be, or the divisional round, it would be Buffalo against Cincinnati. But Hickey, you kind of wonder why the NFL, if they said, let's just say if it was Bengals Bills in the AFC divisional round, why that wouldn't be neutral site. Because if the Bengals would have won that game, the Bengals would have had 13 wins. Buffalo would have ended the year with 13 wins as well, but the Bengals would have beat the Bills head-to-head. So I just wonder now, like, because you look at it, there's no way the Bills and Bengals can meet in the AFC title game. The Chiefs are the one. Bengals and Bills are 2-3. If both of them win this weekend, they're playing in the divisional round next week. But I do understand Bengals fans last week that were saying there's kind of like no road really for them to get a neutral site in the AFC title game. But should there be a case for a Bengal fan to say that the divisional round then should be neutral site?
Absolutely, because that's why that game was so massive last week, was because if the Bills lose, they go from first to third. Yeah. And obviously that's just, you know, has massive implications. And even if the Bengals never get to one, as we know, the Chiefs won out, so they were never going to get to one. But you now host the AFC divisional round game instead of going to Buffalo. So yeah, if you want to talk about what is a better case to make a neutral site game, I'd argue Bills-Bengals would be a better neutral site game than an AFC title game of Chiefs-Bills.
But then if you're Buffalo and you get to that AFC title game and you already beat the Chiefs, you're going to say, well, if we would have just played that game and won that game, then we would have had home field advantage. So you could do this argument and this dance from
One's going to be happy. There's always going to be one party upset.
Where is this AFC title game, if it is Bills and Chiefs, where is this AFC title game going to be? Because we don't know yet. And you would think, right, even though they're two outdoor teams, wouldn't the NFL's preference, you would believe, would be indoors, Hickey?
I don't know. Like, I was kind of thinking, like, why wouldn't it be outside? Like, it's three teams playing the elements. No one have an unfair advantage.
But then you don't have to deal with the elements, and also you could, maybe for future years, and this is something I'd be so against, but I've seen people talk about this, maybe this opens the door to kind of make Super Bowl week, as we know it, kind of start 2 weeks earlier, where AFC and NFC title games would be at a neutral site, and most of the times that would be probably in an indoor stadium. So I wonder, and I hope this isn't the case, but I've seen people make this case that they wonder if you do get Chiefs and Bills, not that anyone could have thought that they would have needed a neutral site, but this allows them to experiment or at least showcase what this could like for years to come, and then it's just a major cash cow where it's not just a Super Bowl being a neutral site, and we've seen obviously outdoor Super Bowls as well in good weather cities, and then also in New York too, which they dodged a bullet there because the next day was a snowstorm. But there's been some thinking that if this, and how could it not go over well, if this opens up the door a little bit in a weird way to maybe in the future doing AFC and NFC title games neutral site, which I would hate. Because as a fan, you understand the Super Bowl being a neutral site. But if you're able to be a home fan at an AFC or NFC title game and you win that game, it's just such a special moment that it's tough to recreate that feel in a neutral site. Like, you go to the Super Bowl, and I've been to a bunch. You get a lot of people there that aren't fans of either teams. And it takes a little bit away from the atmosphere, and it's more of an event than a game. You don't want that to happen then in the AFC and NFC title game as well, in my opinion.
I guess, what's the business sense of putting it at a neutral site?
Oh, well, you have so much money just coming on in. The NFL could have so many events like parties and all that stuff as well.
Couldn't you do that anyway with whoever's hosting?
Yeah, but you have it at an isolated location in a warm weather city. In a stadium like that, it's like another Super Bowl for you to just make a tremendous amount of cash for the league.
I guess. I mean,
If you go to a bunch of Super Bowls, you'll see how much money the NFL makes at those individual events. That's what people think could happen with the AFC and the NFC. But where would this be? For like, if we're going through locations right now, because you can't go into divisional round weekend without knowing. So, like, let's say the Vikings, for example, win this weekend. then I think Minnesota's going to be out, even though they probably won't get in the NFC title game and probably won't have a home NFC title game, but you can't run that risk of them potentially that being the location, and then they need that game for a home NFC title game. So you go through the locations, I guess Miami is in play. If you're looking for good weather cities or an indoor stadium, I know Miami doesn't have an indoor stadium, but good weather city. I would say nothing in the AFC North. Maybe Pittsburgh. I saw Pittsburgh was floated out there. So is that a possibility? Jacksonville. Then Indianapolis, I saw already had another event. Houston, I guess, could be in play. That stadium has hosted Super Bowls. AFC West, I would not think if it's a game involving the Chiefs and the Bills, the only way it's a neutral site. I guess they could use SoFi. That could be a possibility. Or Las Vegas. Yeah, actually, SoFi Las Vegas would be pretty damn good. And then you shift over to the NFC. Jerry's World, obviously. NFC North, if you want to say Minnesota. NFC South, I guess you could use Tampa Bay as a possibility. And for the Rams, they play in SoFi. The Super Bowl's in Arizona, so they're not going to do that. I'm thinking if I take three guesses, Hickey, Las Vegas, Dallas, or here's one that we didn't mention, Atlanta. Good city, brand new stadium too. Those are probably the three that I would think. Dallas, Atlanta, and then Vegas. I think one of those three is probably would be where that neutral site AFC title game is.
My number one choice would be Nashville. Titan Stadium, Nissan Stadium. It's open, but the weather's not going to be that cold or it's not going to be that impactful. It's about equidistant. I believe it's about 10 hours each from Buffalo and from Kansas City. So it's, for the most part, equal in terms of fan base having an equal opportunity to get there to, it's not too far. Like, if you know, so
you wonder how much they're going to take that into account. Like, logically, you should. I hope they do.
Like, SoFi or even Vegas, like, it's pretty unfair for the Bills and their fans to travel halfway across the country. Where, sure, it's still far for Kansas City, but it's a lot closer to Kansas City than it is for Buffalo, especially if you go across all the way across the country. That's pretty crazy.
I don't care where you play the game. You could put that game on Mars. If the Bills are in the AFC title game with a shot to go to the Super Bowl, I know that there are certain ways that you divide out ticket allotment and all that. That will be a big-time Bills crowd. There is no doubt about it.
Chiefs fans
are unbelievable, but there was a big snowstorm this year, and people were wondering, how the heck are the Bills going to get out? Then they were in Detroit, and the next thing you know, that stadium was covered with Bills fans for that Bills-Browns game. So if the Bills are in the AFC title game, it's a neutral site. Put the game on Mars, and Bills Mafia will be there probably 70% of the stadium, if not north of that, just taking over that stadium.
Now, Mark Maskey of Washington Post is reporting that the NFL will come to a decision this week. Would that rule out some then of the places? Like, you mentioned Jacksonville.
Yeah.
Well, I guess Jacksonville never would have an AFC title game in this situation. Like, they would be hosting, so it doesn't really matter. Like, they
matter. That's right. That's a good point. That's why you could, for the AFC, you could eliminate most of those spots, because even if, let's just say, Jacksonville somehow, which they're not going to be hosting an AFC title game, wasn't going to be a neutral site anyway.
Right.
Yeah.
So I guess, you can pick cities like that where it doesn't really matter too much.
That's where it comes to play, because like a team like Minnesota, not that you think Minnesota is going to be hosting an NFC title game, but they are a 3 seed right now. It's not in the realm of possibilities that we have some upsets that go down in divisional round weekend, and the next thing you know, the Vikings, if you're planning on going there, are hosting an NFC title game, and then it's like your SOL. Dallas too.
Doubleheader Minnesota.
Like, even Dallas being the 5, it's unlikely that Dallas wins 2 games in the postseason, but who knows? We've just seen some crazy things happen this year in the NFL. So I think you have an idea this week, and then probably if, assuming, you know, Kansas City already has a bye, assuming Buffalo does win this weekend, which we think they will, then, okay, if Buffalo were to win, if the Chiefs were to win, you would then know early next week where you'd be going for that neutral site AFC title game. Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. We'll take a timeout. We'll come on back, and we're back into a little Sean McVay conversation and sprinkle in some college football as well.
What's the strangest thing you're afraid of?
Tails without fur on them, such as rats or possums.
I'm Larry Mullins, host of the podcast Your Weirdest Fears, where we dig into the crazy things you're afraid of. Everything from animal-people hybrids, you know, people who get surgeries to look like an animal, to giant statues.
If I ever saw one of those giant statues, I probably would poop my pants.
Listen and subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast from. What's the strangest thing you're afraid of?
Tails without fur on them, such as rats or possums.
I'm Larry Mullins, host of the podcast Your Weirdest Fears, where we dig into the crazy things you're afraid of. Everything from animal-people hybrids, you know, people who get surgeries to look like an animal, to giant statues.
If I ever saw one of those giant statues, I probably would poop my pants.
Listen and subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast from. What's the strangest thing you're afraid of?
Tails without fur on them, such as rats or possums.
I'm Larry Mullins, host of the podcast Your Weirdest Fears, where we dig into the crazy things you're afraid of. Everything from animal-people hybrids, you know, people who get surgeries to look like an animal, to giant statues.
If I ever saw one of those giant statues, I probably would poop my pants.
Listen and subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast from.